This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Your headlines. Israeli regime strikes various locations in Gaza, including Rafah and Gaza City, raising the Palestinian death toll to over 32,000. Russia and China vetoed a U.S. draft resolution at the U.N. Security Council for failing to genuinely call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. And dozens of people are killed as gunmen attack a concert hall near Russia's capital, Moscow. Hello everyone. Now nearly 6 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza and regime's unrelenting bombing campaign and shelling have claimed more lives in the Palestinian territory. At least 10 Palestinians were killed in Israeli airstrikes on Gaza City, and a home was struck in the southern city of Rafah, where 8 people, mostly women and children, lost their lives. And 3 more people were killed in an airstrike in Khan Yunis, also in the south. The Israeli regime began its war on Gaza back on October the 7th. And since then, more than 32,000 people have been killed, most of them women and children, and over 7,000 are still unaccounted for and presumed buried under rubble. Also, another 74,300 Palestinians have been injured. The United Nations' top aid official in occupied Palestinian territories says more supplies and more fuel are needed to make sure the Gaza hospitals can operate.
I've just been inside the Kamal Adwan Hospital. I met with Dr. Usman and his team, and we took a tour of the hospital. We see ourselves what was there, and they're really struggling to provide the services required for the patients coming in, especially children, but there's also a lot of trauma patients coming in, many coming in from the food distributions where there's been a lot of injuries. And then also, because of what's happening in Shifa, many people are coming from Shifa here, and it's overwhelming the hospital. So we had to get more support, more supplies, and more fuel in to make sure the hospital keeps running.
This comes as head of the World Health Organization describes conditions inside the besieged Al-Shifa Hospital in central Gaza as utterly inhumane. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says no basic medical supplies, no dressings for wounds, and no medicine is available at Al-Shifa. According to the WHO chief, over 50 health workers and 143 patients have been trapped in one of the buildings there since the second day of the raid, with extremely limited food and water. Ongoing Israeli strikes in the vicinity of the hospital have made it impossible for patients to receive the care they need. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says over 100 people have so far been killed in Israeli raid on Al-Shifa Hospital. The UN Security Council has rejected a U.S. draft resolution which linked a ceasefire in Gaza to the release of captives by Hamas. 11 Security Council members backed the resolution. However, permanent members Russia and China, as well as rotating member Algeria, voted against it, while one country abstained. Hamas welcomed the rejection of the U.S. U.S. draft resolution. It said the resolution would have given Israel cover and legitimacy for what it called the war of extermination of Palestinians. The Palestinian envoy to the UN called the resolution one-sided. Riyad Mansour expressed support for another draft resolution put forward by elected members of the Security Council, which is expected to be voted on soon. The Russian and Chinese representatives also said the U.S. resolution is imbalanced and does not clearly call for a Gaza ceasefire.
Distinguished colleagues, from the very onset, it was clear that the so-called negotiations which our U.S. colleagues have been engaged in on this issue have been focused merely to drag out the time. All of our comments, all of our red lines were time and time disregarded, as were the proposals of a number of other delegations. This was some kind of an empty rhetorical exercise rather than normal work document. The American product is exceedingly politicized, the sole purpose of which is to help to play to the voters, to throw them a bone in the form of some kind of a mention of a ceasefire in Gaza, and to establish the U.S.'s political ambitions in the region through the establishment of terrorist labels, and to ensure the impunity of Israel, whose crimes in the draft are not even assessed. I wish to draw attention to the following. The U.S. draft contains an effective green light for Israel to mount a military operation in Rafah. At the very least, the authors try to make it such that nothing would prevent Western Jerusalem from continuing their brutal cleansing of the south of the Gaza Strip. And what is Washington actually trying to achieve? We have already stated that we will no longer tolerate pointless resolutions which do not contain a call for a ceasefire, which lead us to nowhere. This draft should not pass with the majority of the membership.
Iran's foreign minister says the tragedy in Gaza has demonstrated to the world that the issue of human rights, including those of women and children, is mere political plaything for the West. In a phone call with leader of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, Hossein Amir Abdullahian said the inhumane nature of the Israeli regime and U.S. support for genocide is also now clear to everyone. The top Iranian diplomat also called for immediate action by relevant international organizations to stop the genocide and provide unrestricted aid to Gaza residents. For his part, Ziad al-Nakhala hailed Iran's support for the Palestinian people and resistance. He described unity among Palestinian factions as key to their success against the Israeli regime. A funeral has been held for a Palestinian who succumbed to injuries he sustained 8 months ago during an Israeli raid near the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. People gathered to mourn the death of Amir Ghaleb Said Jaqoub in his hometown of Beita. He was shot in the head while regime forces were invading the town in August of last year. A report suggests that Amir was hit as he rushed to help a wounded Palestinian. His death brings to 12 number of Palestinians killed in the West Bank in the past 24 hours. Israeli forces have conducted new raids on different cities since Friday, and that resulted in the killing of 4 Palestinians in Jenin, another 4 in Tulkarm, 1 in Al-Khalil, 1 in Ramallah, and 1 in Abiha. Occupying forces have intensified their incursions into the occupied West Bank since October the 7th, that's the day when the regime launched its genocidal war on Gaza. And earlier we discussed with our Ramallah correspondent Mona Candiel new Israeli raids on cities and villages in the occupied West Bank and the abduction of Palestinians there.
Israeli troops also stormed the village of Turmus Aya, north Ramallah. They have raided the village of Yatta in Al-Khalil, southern the occupied West Bank, as well as the refugee camp of Aida in Bethlehem, and detained a number of Palestinians from these areas. In Tulkarm, the Israeli forces stormed Tulkarm, stormed a number of villages there, and exchange of fire have taken place between members of the resistance groups and the Israeli forces in Tulkarm areas. At least one Palestinian child was wounded during a military operation in the village of the Nabi in Tulkarm. The Israeli forces had also carried out an operation and detained a number of Palestinians in the village of Jain Safut in Qalqilia, and this comes while the Palestinians continue to face strict measures at the military checkpoints, and people are being detained at military checkpoints not only during the military operations to the Palestinian villages. According to the Commission of Prisoners Affairs, the Israeli forces had arrested 25 Palestinians on Friday, and early Saturday a number of Palestinians had been detained, and this means that over 7,730 Palestinians were arrested by the Israeli forces since the 7th of October.
Meanwhile, tens of thousands of Yemenis once again filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities to reaffirm their steadfast support for the Palestinian cause and resistance. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
Under the banner, our operations will continue. Stop your aggression. Tens of thousands of Yemenis have taken to the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities across the country to renew their full support for the Palestinians. They have also called on Yemen's armed forces to persist with their naval operations in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden in solidarity with Palestine.
We realize that the cause is our cause, and the enemy is our enemy, and we are fighting a battle that is essentially our battle. Our blood is one, we and the Palestinians, and Islam is the religion of all of us, and we cannot abandon our brothers in religion. We are fighting from a Quranic culture, and what the people of Gaza are exposed to is the same as what the Yemenis were exposed to.
Protesters chanted slogans criticizing the United Nations Security Council's recent statement against Yemen's naval operations. They argue that the world body has demonstrated its alignment with White House policies, disregarding its role in maintaining international security.
Today, Yemenis are rallying in dozens of squares in their millions, as if it were a human flood, an extension of the Al-Aqsa flood operation. The Yemenis today, despite the years of war and despite the difficult circumstances they are going through, are still committed to their first and central issue, which is the Palestinian cause.
The Yemeni people came out today to send a message to the people of Palestine and Gaza that they are not alone. The Yemenis stand with Palestine with all their military capabilities, whether naval forces or drones. And our message to the enemies is that we will not stop fighting and confronting them.
Earlier, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, the leader of the Ansarullah movement, warned the Western powers of stronger and more effective attacks in the future. He highlighted that the Yemeni army has managed to outmaneuver Western technology in surveillance, jamming, and interception, marking a significant advancement in the development of Yemen's military industries.
Despite the sunny weather, thousands of Yemenis have gathered here while fasting to make their point. They say if not for the border restrictions, they would pass through neighboring states to reach Palestine and join the struggle against the Israeli invaders until the liberation of the occupied territories. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
Spain, Ireland, Malta, and Slovenia have announced plans to recognize the state of Palestine as global solidarity with the Palestinian cause gains momentum. Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez made the announcement following a meeting in Brussels with his counterparts from the other three EU countries. Sanchez said recognition of Palestinian statehood is the only way to lasting peace in the region. He said the recognition will come into effect in Spain within the current four-year legislative term. The global solidarity movement for Palestine has gained momentum since Israel launched its genocidal war on Gaza. More than 130 countries throughout the world have already recognized the state of Palestine. And now joining us from central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah for an update is Moti Abu Musaba. Hello, Moti, hope you're safe. What can you tell us there on the ground today and this ongoing siege and so-called attempted evacuation on Al-Shifa Hospital?
Yes, actually, it was another tough and bloody day for several Palestinian civilians across all areas of Gaza Strip. And let's begin from Rafah City, where as the Israeli warplanes carried out a relentless airstrikes against residential buildings in the city. At least four Palestinian children and a woman were reportedly killed over those attacks, particularly in the eastern parts of the city. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery maintained shelling the eastern and the western parts of Khan Yunis city. Intense Israeli shelling actually reached those areas over the last night. When it comes to the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli warplanes carried out relentless and cruel Israeli airstrikes against Al-Amal town located in the northern part of Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. It includes several residential towers. The Israeli occupation forces flattened and leveled to the ground several residential towers in that area, leaving thousands of the Palestinian civilians homeless. When it comes to Deir al-Balah city, the Israeli artillery maintained shelling the eastern part of the city. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery also maintained the southern part of the city as at least nine Israeli tanks and bulldozers invaded the Al-Matahan Square. Needless to mention, mentioned that it was previously attacked by the Israeli occupation forces a couple of months ago. Now the Israeli occupation forces reiterated their attack against that area amid heavy gunfire and bombardments of the Israeli tanks and the Israeli artillery. At least 5 Palestinian civilians were reportedly injured over those successive attacks against Deir el-Balah city. When it comes to Gaza City, as you know, that the continuous Israeli aggression against the Ashifa Square enters its sixth consecutive day with continuous attacks, with fierce airstrikes and artillery shelling and the gunfire of the Israeli tanks. Several buildings inside the Ashifa compound were targeted heavily by the Israeli bombardments and the Israeli shelling, leaving multiple buildings on fire. Over that intensive attacks. In the meantime, the Palestinian residents who are still stranded and who are still besieged inside the hospital actually are living catastrophic humanitarian conditions. They are trapped between the continuous Israeli attacks and the lack of the basic humanitarian needs, as the Israeli occupation forces are still denying them any entry of their basic humanitarian necessities. In the meantime, as you know, that the surrounding areas also were targeted heavily by the Israeli attacks and the Israeli airstrikes. Several residential buildings were destroyed, in addition to the people who were killed over those chronic attacks against the residential apartments in the vicinity of the Ashifa Medical Complex. Multiple appeals were released by those families and those Palestinian civilians in that area for the international human rights organizations and for the Red Cross Society in order to help them to be evacuated and to rescue them from this continuous Israeli attack that is targeting them continuously. However, we are talking about continuous attacks. On the other hand, the Palestinian resistance continued their attacks and their counterattacks against the Israeli tanks, as several clashes erupted between the Palestinian resistance and the Israeli occupation forces, particularly in Ar-Rimal neighborhood and Al-Wahda Street, over the last couple of hours.
All right, thank you for your report and update, and stay safe, Muti. We'll talk to you soon. Muti Abu Musabe joining us from Deir el-Balah in central Gaza. The worst terror attack in Russia in years. At least 60 people are killed and 145 wounded in a shooting attack claimed by Daesh terrorists. Now, the death toll is expected to rise as dozens are in serious condition. Attack took place when gunmen in combat fatigues opened fire and detonated explosives at a major concert hall on the outskirts of Moscow. In a Telegram post, the Daesh terrorist group said its gunmen had managed to escape afterwards. Russian authorities have launched a massive manhunt. The Moscow mayor says all cultural, sporting, and other mass events will be canceled in the capital for the weekend. The attack is the worst in Russia since the 2004 Beslan school siege, in which more than 330 people, half of them children, were killed. Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Through consistent and glaring failures in their coverage, establishment media, including supposedly liberal outlets, from the BBC and CNN to The Guardian and New York Times, have smoothed the way for the Zionist regime to carry out mass slaughter in Gaza, what the World Court has assessed as a genocide. Western establishments and their media have been waging a giant campaign of misdirection for the past 5 months, as they have against Palestinians over previous years and decades. Western publics have been encouraged to look in the wrong direction. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East I wrote, hostages tortured to death, parents executed in front of their children, doctors beaten, babies murdered, sexual assault weaponized. This is part of an ever-growing list of documented atrocities committed by the Israeli regime in the 5 months since October 7th, quite separate from the carpet bombing of 2.3 million Palestinians in Gaza and a famine induced by the Zionist regime's obstruction of aid. Last week, an investigation by the Israeli newspaper Haaretz disclosed that some 27 Palestinians seized off Gaza's streets over the past 5 months are known to have died during interrogations inside the occupied territories called Israel. Some were denied medical treatment, but most are likely to have been tortured to death. 3 months ago, a Haaretz editorial warned that the Zionist regime jails must not become execution facilities for Palestinians. Israeli TV channels have been excitedly taking viewers on tours of detention centers, showing the appalling conditions Palestinians are kept in, as well as the psychological and physical abuse they are subjected to. An Israeli regime judge recently called the makeshift cages in which Palestinians are held unsuitable for humans. Remember, a large proportion of the 4,000 or so Palestinians taken hostage by the Zionist regime since October 7th, probably the vast majority, are civilians, like the men and boys paraded through Gaza's streets or held in a stadium stripped of clothing before being dragged off to a dark cell in Israel. According to Israeli regime media, many dozens of Palestinian women, including pregnant women, have been seized too, but in their case, off camera. According to United Nations legal experts, Palestinian women are suffering the most degrading forms of abuse at the hands of the Zionist regime's military. The experts observed that Palestinian women and girls in detention were reportedly being subjected to multiple forms of sexual assault. At least two female Palestinian detainees were reportedly raped, while others were reportedly threatened with rape and sexual violence. The Zionist regime troops are also believed to have taken photos of female detainees in degrading circumstances and then uploaded them online. Palestinian women and girls in Gaza are also reported by their families to have gone missing after contact with the Zionist regime army. They said, "There are disturbing reports of at least one female infant forcibly transferred by the Israeli army into Israel, and of children being separated from their parents, whose whereabouts remain unknown." A separate report by the UN last week revealed that 21 of its staff humanitarian aid workers had been snatched by the Zionist regime. They were then tortured to extract confessions, most likely false, of involvement In the October 7th events, their torture included beatings, waterboarding, and threats to family members. Those confessions were cited by Western allies as the grounds, in fact, the only known grounds for cutting off funding to the UN relief agency UNRWA, the last lifeline for Gaza's starving population. It was these claims extracted through torture that helped the Zionist regime rationalize its imposing of a famine on Gaza. Of the 1,000 detainees subsequently released, 29 were children, one as young as six, and 80 women. Some were reported to have cancer and chronic illnesses such as Alzheimer's. According to the UN investigation, Palestinians reported severe punishment beatings, being caged with attack dogs, and suffering sexual assault. Physical evidence such as broken ribs, dislocated shoulders, bite marks, and burns was still visible many weeks later. These horrors, of course, are not just taking place in cells and interrogation rooms inside Israel. Gaza is being subjected to astonishing levels of brutality and sadism from the Zionist regime troops, quite aside from the carpet bombing and enforced starvation of civilians. The Zionist regime snipers have fired into Gaza's hospitals, killing medical staff and patients there. The Zionist regime's military has used Palestinians as human shields, including one man sent into a hospital, his hands bound, to announce an Israeli order to evacuate the premises. The Zionist regime forces executed him on his return. Those trying to follow such evacuation orders, waving white flags, have been shot at. Medical facilities have been repeatedly invaded by the Zionist regime military in stark violation of international law. Those who could not be evacuated, such as premature babies, have been left to die unattended, even while Israeli regime troops were occupying the building. Other examples of murderous cruelty are documented daily. Unarmed Palestinians, including those waving white flags, have been shot dead by the Zionist regime troops. Palestinian parents have been executed in cold blood in front of their children. There have been repeated episodes of Israeli regime forces gunning down en masse desperate Palestinians trying to reach aid, as happened yet again this week. And even Israeli regime hostages trying to escape their captors have been killed by the very Israeli troops they were trying to surrender to. These are just some of the cases of Israeli regime sadism and barbarity that have surfaced briefly in Western media coverage, soon to be forgotten.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. Nearly 6 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, the regime's relentless bombardment and shelling has claimed more lives in the besieged territory. The Palestinians' death toll has now surpassed 32,000, who are mostly women and children. Israel keeps expanding the scope of its crimes against Palestinians by bombing and raiding hospitals, opening fire at displaced people queuing to receive aid, and assassinating civilians with drone strikes. And all these atrocities are committed with impunity due to the unconditional support from Western powers, particularly the United States. We'll discuss that more in tonight's Spotlight program. Our guests joining us are author and political activist Eve Engler, joining us from Montreal. And from Chicago, we have political commentator Shabir Rizvi.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Engler in Montreal. Attacking hospitals and shelters, it's been a hallmark of the Israeli regime's conduct throughout its genocidal assault. Now Al-Shifa Hospital, where 30,000 Palestinians are taking shelter, has been under attack and under siege for almost a week now. Some of the details of what's going on there: Israeli forces have cut off water and electricity to the medical facility. Has the impunity of the Israelis, completely in line with the inaction of the international community, reached this point where they can push the boundaries of monstrosity and act in complete contravention of all international conventions and rules of armed conflict?
Unfortunately, it has. It's war crime after war crime after war crime after war crime. They boast about it. Israeli, soldiers boast about it online. And it looks like the U.S. is going to be vetoing another U.N. resolution. Israel just keeps getting the support, gets new weapons, and there seems to be almost no threshold at which they can surpass that leads to serious consequence. It's almost beyond belief. We just have to keep raising the pressure in the countries like Canada, where I am, that have been enabling this unbelievable horror.
Mr. Rizvi, the U.S. Proposed a resolution at the Security Council earlier today, calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and a hostage deal. That was not passed as Russia and China vetoed it. Moscow and Beijing, of course, voting down the U.S. resolution. It shouldn't come as a surprise, as an immediate and unconditional ceasefire not linked to the release of the captives was all they would accept. Break down what happened today at the Security Council, and how did you view the U.S. proposal in the first place?
Yes, well, it's clear that the U.S. so-called ceasefire proposal isn't a real proposal for ceasefire. If you read the details, this basically just abides by Israel's demands without making any real concessions to the Palestinian resistance. And first and foremost, this so-called deal would allow for the full invasion of Rafah, where the Israeli army would without a doubt continue the ethnic cleansing, continue the war crimes, and continue the genocide. This is being falsely promoted, in my opinion, as a ceasefire deal in order to make Russia, China, and whoever else disagrees with that may disagree with this ceasefire proposal look like the bad guys at a time where there is more violence and more ethnic cleansing happening before our eyes. Within the actual ceasefire resolution, the quote-unquote ceasefire resolution proposed by the United States, this was basically just blanketed as Israeli demands. And they might say that, you know, they're allowing or they're asking for more humanitarian aid to come into Gaza. But what we're seeing is the delivery of the humanitarian aid is being impeded by Israeli settlers who block off access to the humanitarian aid. Two, the delivery of the humanitarian aid in itself is a weapon, because as Palestinians are being starved out, starving Palestinians run to the deliveries, wherever the aid is being delivered, only to be shot down by Israeli forces or be crushed by the crates that are being airdropped anyway. So in and of itself, the delivery of the so-called humanitarian aid is actually allowing for the further elimination and ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. And last but not least, baked into that would likely be the expansion of this so-called humanitarian port that's being built on Gaza, which, by the way, the Palestinians never had access to or the ability to build their own ports in the first place due to being besieged by the Israeli occupation. This would allow the United States to then create this port, which would lead to more further occupation of Palestine, perhaps even installing some sort of U.S.-Israel partnership base to besiege Gaza even further. So the whole deal is not really a deal.
Mr. Engler, the U.S., it wants to establish a port to deliver humanitarian assistance in Gaza, but at the same time it provides weapons and lethal arsenal to the Israelis. Break down this questionable and appalling hypocrisy and inconsistency by the U.S. Many critics have described the U.S.'s involvement in efforts for ceasefires nothing but a facade.
Correctly so. There is no problem with getting food and other things into Gaza if Israel just stops blocking it by truck. And a simple way to pressure Israel to stop blocking it by truck would be to say that we are going to, at minimum, stop the weapon shipments until you stop doing that, let alone the $4 billion a year in annual military donations or aid donations to Israel that the U.S. gives, plus this plan to expand that. So this is not rocket science. There is no reason why there can't be hundreds, if not thousands, of trucks that enter Gaza every single day like they have in the past. This is just that Israel wants to collectively punish Palestinians. Israel wants to drive Palestinians out. Israel wants to make it unlivable. And it's the responsibility of those governments that have provided so many forms of diplomatic, financial, military, etc. Support to withdraw that to make sure Israel lets in food. But that's not complicated. This is a sort of all a big diplomatic game Americans are playing to act like they're getting tough on Israel. They're against the operation in Rafah because it's bad for public opinion when it comes to the U.S. internationally, and so they're making a big, huge show of visiting Blinken, visiting Israel, and acting like they're trying. I mean, if they really want this to happen, they really want there not to be a full-on onslaught on Rafah, they really want food to get in, they have to exchange that, bring in pressure. It's simple, and we're not talking about boycotting and divestment and sanctions, which many people are calling for. We're talking about just stop these huge financial subsidies that are already being given. Just withdraw this unique form of support that's already being given to this country that, going back 5 months, was a brutal apartheid state and is now engaged in a holocaust in Gaza.
Mr. Rizvi, Israel has backtracked on a photo collage of resistance fighters it claimed to have captured during the raid on Al-Shifa Hospital. Hamas had, of course, earlier dismissed the Israeli regime's allegations that tens of members of the Palestinian resistance movement had been arrested during the ongoing attack and siege of the Al-Shifa hospital in Gaza. Hamas says that the attack on Al-Shifa is part of the systematic destruction of health facilities by the Israeli regime. Do you see it in that light as well?
Absolutely. What the Israeli regime is doing is they're intentionally attacking hospitals. And when people are in the hospitals, they're going to pull out anyone that is a military age male, which to them, by definition, is going to be anyone that looks remotely like a teen, all the way to maybe even the elderly. And they're going to accuse them of being Hamas just because they fit that description. This then, they turn around and tell the international community that this justifies their operations within hospitals. Everyone knows that this is false, that they are lying, but they are going to keep peddling this lie in order to continue their war crimes against these hospitals, against the Palestinian people. It's becoming clear, at least to the international community. I mean, I've known about this for years. Many people that are familiar with the Palestinian issue have known about this for years, that Israel has always wanted to ethnically cleanse the Gaza Strip. It's always been a thorn on their side, and they are taking this opportunity to commit an ethnic cleansing before the world and kick out the Palestinian people. And one of their ways of doing this is, as you said, systematically destroying whatever health care is left in the Gaza Strip, which to begin with was already terrible. People couldn't get cancer treatment. People couldn't get treatments for various diseases. They actually had to leave the Gaza Strip to do it. So these health facilities were already not in great shape. They weren't allowed to have various devices, various medicines, and even doctors weren't even able to be trained properly by world health standards. And so what Israel is doing is eliminating what's left so that when Palestinians return back to the Gaza Strip, to these various hospitals, they have absolutely nothing to start off with. And so it's clear that what we're seeing here is war crime upon war crime, and they're justifying it by calling anyone that stands in their way Hamas or Hamas affiliates.
Mr. Engler, the Rafah offensive, appears to be imminent. On that issue, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has called it a quote-unquote mistake. Now, that's a severe understatement to call it just a mistake, as it would be a mass slaughter of civilians taking shelter in their last refuge as their homes have been demolished. What has the international community learned over the past 6 months of this genocide unfolding? And with that, how can the international community stop this massacre of Rafah from happening?
Well, I think most of the world's population has had it confirmed that Israel, Zionism, is a absolutely brutal country, political movement that needs to be overturned, altered, radically altered, whatever you want to call it. So I think for the vast majority of the world's population, they've learned just that there is kind of no horror that Israel won't commit. For when we talk about the international community, when we talk about the powerful Anglosphere or NATO countries, anyone with a minimum of heart, of humanism in those positions of authority and power, they should have learned at this point that the only way that Israel is going to be restrained from its most odious tendencies is to end the forms of support that we are giving to it. I mean, so no matter how many times Blinken repeat some concern about human lives being lost, there's too many, or Biden claims that he's caught in a hot mic saying that there's too many people being killed and this kind of stuff, it's a matter of bringing in something that's going to bring some form of cost to the Israeli government and, quite frankly, to the Israeli public. The Israeli public are genocidal. The Israeli public are drunk on supremacism, and they need to be restrained. They need to understand that the world's hegemon and the powerful countries are no longer going to provide the weapons, to give one example, for the Holocaust they're committing. The international community, if you know, Blinken at this point, if he's has any seriousness about wanting to curtail a slaughter on top of the however many slaughters that have been committed, he has to bring in some form of sanction on Israel.
Shabby Riz, a video has been released showing Israeli forces killing, or better said, executing 4 unarmed Palestinians in Gaza using drones. Now, the unfolding events of the past few days, i.e., the continued blocking of entry of aid, the siege of Al-Shifa Hospital, they clearly expose Israel's intentions of engineering this famine and contributing to this genocide that's taking place. Is this a clear indication that this massacre has not only been a war against Gaza's resistance, but against all of the population of Gaza?
I saw that footage. It was terrible. It made me tear up, just how criminal they are towards the Palestinian people. I think from day one, day one was on October 7th. I think from day one, Israel's sights were set on Gaza and removing all the Palestinians from there. What we're seeing right now is for Israel, a closing window, because they feel that, you know, the United States, as Netanyahu said earlier, that they want to continue the operation with or without the United States support. We all know the United States is the main financier and the main political backer of Israel. In fact, without the United States' help, Israel wouldn't last a second. It would be crushed. And what we're seeing is an unhinged Israel that knows that the United States will support it no matter what, but now clearly being challenged to some degree as Joe Biden and the Democratic Party here face resistance not only in the streets of the United States, where millions and millions of people across the country weekly demonstrate for the Palestinian cause, and the Palestinian cause in the United States is more popular than ever, but now it's actually even reflecting at the polls, where in states like Michigan, which has a significantly large an Arab population and a Muslim population, they're voting uncommitted to a point where it's showing in the polls, it's hurting Biden, where 10%, 20%, 30% of people are voting uncommitted. I live in the state of Illinois, where in Chicago, a significant portion of people that typically vote Democratic are now voting uncommitted. In fact, they wrote down the word Gaza instead of uncommitted. The Palestinian cause is becoming more popular, and with this, Israel is afraid. Israel is afraid of the support that it used to enjoy throughout the international community. And so right now what it's doing is it's lashing out. And unfortunately, their soldiers also have, unfortunately for them, I should say, their soldiers have no discipline. They feel completely emboldened. If you check their Telegram channels, they're uploading videos of them torturing Palestinians, of them massacring Palestinians. And the world is seeing this. The world is seeing the Israeli experiment for what it has been since it started. These types of massacres have been happening since the 1940s, and they've happened every year since then. The world is finally waking up to the ongoing horror that Palestinians have faced. And the Israeli regime, for this part, is panicking. They see, to some extent, a window closing on that support, and they're willing to do whatever is what necessary within that window to meet their goals. Those goals are clearly not being met. The Palestinian resistance is still alive and well. They still have not been able to save any hostages without massacring, without even massacring those hostages. And in fact, they've allegedly killed 70 out of the 100-something hostages with their own bombs and bullets. We're seeing this Israeli regime fall apart in real time. And with this falling apart, they're becoming more and more heinous and committing more war crimes in order to meet their political goals, but to no avail.
Mr. Engler, Iran's foreign minister has recently said the world has realized that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has reached the end of the line and is desperately trying to survive. Now, a U.S. Intelligence report had earlier surfaced in this regard that the White House was likely searching for an alternative to Netanyahu. Is Netanyahu now a liability, even not just for Israel itself, but for Israel's allies? And do you think that he's one of the main reasons that any negotiations on a ceasefire keep failing.
Yeah, well, I think Netanyahu's been a liability. Well, specifically the right far right cabinet, even before the last 6 months. So there was a concern that these fascists have taken over the Israeli government. So the U.S. at this point, Netanyahu has very very particularist, narrow personal interests in not having an election and not finding himself in jail and stuff like that. So that's all part of it. And I think that the U.S. Would prefer Benny Gantz in as prime minister and have a little bit more compliant, a little bit less extreme leader leading this genocide. But there's not really that substantive difference. And this is you know, the U.S. doesn't need to continue. You know, they can withdraw. I mean, again, they don't have to send weapons. The shipments of weapons don't have to happen. The U.S. soldiers, the U.S. intelligence assisting the U.S. doesn't have to happen, or assisting Israel doesn't have to happen. All these different forms of support, they don't have to happen. But I think that Netanyahu is a liability. That's been the case for a long time, and yet the U.S.'s policy is to back this European colonial outpost destroying the Middle East.
Shabi Rizvi, why aren't regional blocs or even Arab governments stepping up and taking matters into their own hands? Many officials have called on Muslim and Arab countries to openly express their opposition to Israel, to blockade Israel, to cut ties with Israel. Why is that not happening?
The sad fact is that a lot of these Arab leaders are traitors. Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Jordan, they created within months, within weeks of the Yemeni blockade of the Red Sea, they created a land bridge to make sure that Israel still gets its exports, or rather gets its imports one way or another. The same could be said for Turkey, which has become one of the main exporters of fruits and vegetables to the Israeli regime, especially as Hezbollah rains down rockets on the north, which hurts their agricultural sector, only for Turkey to come around and basically give them the same goods. Of course, they have to pay more for these, but that's besides the point. A lot of these regimes are now showing their true face. These leaders are showing their true colors. They want to be part, to some extent, of the American experiment, or rather they want to play both sides of it and hope for the best. But the fact of the matter is, you can't play both sides. If you're playing both sides, then you're essentially playing into the hands of the Americans. Now is the time to pick a side. Do you want to stand with the Palestinian resistance, or do you want to stand with Israel? Do you want to stand with the U.S. hegemonic order and eventually become those victims yourselves? And I want to remind whoever is sympathetic to Saudi Arabia or to the UAE or to the to Turkey that Israel has plans to expand. It's not just going to stop on occupied Palestine. There is a concept that many of Israel's current leaders float around called Greater Israel that actually expands into Lebanon, that expands into Jordan, that expands into Iraq even. And the fact of the matter is, if they don't retaliate against Israel, if they don't do something about this cancer on the region, one day the gun is going to be pointed at them. And the same people that are financing Israel right now, the United States, will be nowhere to be found, because at the end of the day, the United States wants to make the world in its own image, and they will back Israel 100% when it comes to this Greater Israel project. It doesn't matter how profane it is, how destructive it is. They want to control that land. They want to control West Asia. They want to control the Middle East, whatever you want to call it. Israel serves as the 51st state of the United States, and it wants to expand. We're going to allow that to happen.
All right, that's all the time we have for tonight's show. Allow me to thank my guest, political commentator Shabi Rizvi, joining us from Chicago, and author and political activist Eve Engler, joining us from Montreal. Thank you, gentlemen, and thanks for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering the doubts and questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah هو إذا الرحمن
Allah
هو إذا المنان
لا إله إلا الله.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a very special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom and Islamic scholar, Sheikh Rouhani. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alright, Sheikh Rouhani, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the concept of Akhar al-Zaman, or end time, or end of time. According to Shiite beliefs, when we are getting close to the reappearance of Imam As, we are passing life in end of the time. First of all, this Akhar al-Zaman, is it an authentic concept or not? And what are the main features of this Akhar al-Zaman?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, of course, it is for sure that the world's life one day ends, and it cannot continue forever, because even according to the scientific pieces of evidence, all the world is full of energy that is being expended. So since this energy is using in this universe, one day this energy will finish. So that's why everything will stop. This is according to the scientific kind of studies. But according to the religious sort of ideas and theological ideas, particularly from the Islamic perspective, yes, there is the end of this world. And Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will put an end to the life of this world. And then the Surah Israfil starts, and yes, then everything finishes. And then Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will return back the mankind and the creatures in Qiyamah. So the life of this world is, of course, limited. And we have the end of the time, Akhir al-Zaman, that is for sure, yes, according to the Islamic teachings and doctrines.
Okay. And is this concept, I mean, the end of time, only limited to Islam? Or no, religions before Islam?
Of course, there are many other religions, many other civilizations who believed in such a thing, that one day everything will finish and the last savior will come. And this concept of last savior is mentioned in lots of religions, like Zoroastrianism, like Judaism, Christianity, and also